This is the Everything Financial Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in again this week. I've got a couple of terrific guest experts lined up to chat with this week. Joining me momentarily, Mr. J. David Stein. David is the host of the very popular podcast, Money for the Rest of Us. And then joining me also on today's podcast is Mr. Burton Malkiel. Many of you recognize that name. Mr. Malkiel was the author, is the author, I should say, of A Random Walk Down Wall Street. He first published the book in 1973. It is now in its 11th edition. And I'll have an opportunity to chat with Mr. Malkiel on today's program as well. Let me remind you, if you're not yet a subscriber to my newsletter, which is titled Portfolio Watch, it's easy to become a subscriber. All you need to do is visit the website, yourportfoliowatch.com. The website, again, yourportfoliowatch.com. I am pleased to have, as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, David Stein. David is the host of the consistently top-ranked podcast titled Money for the Rest of Us. And David, welcome to the program.
Great. Thank you. It's good to be here.
David, I think it'd be helpful for our listeners maybe to know a little bit about your background. You weren't always a podcast host, so fill them in on what your background is, please.
Yeah, I've only been a podcast host for 2 years, but prior to that, I spent 15 years as a professional investment manager, focused mostly on the institutional side. So we manage money for institutions, endowments, and foundations, as well as for financial planners, and I was our firm's chief investment strategist. The firm is Fund Evaluation Group. They're about a $50 billion institutional investment advisor. So in that, there I co-led a 20-person research group where we were very much focused on asset classes and finding the best managers in the world, be it stock managers, bond managers, hedge funds, private equity. We really covered the gamut. And in terms of the active management, I was our chief portfolio strategist, so I spent about 8 to 10 years managing a portfolio, which we grew from about $100,000 to over $2 billion. And the focus there was really asset allocation and adjusting the asset allocation portfolio structure based on market conditions, primarily focused on valuations, economic trends, and also market internals, which would be the momentum, trend, the fear and greed in the market.
So you said something there, David, that I think would get the attention of a lot of our listeners, and that is you spent time trying to find the best money managers, and many of our listeners are probably trying to do the same thing to maybe get some help with their money. So what type of philosophy, in your opinion, should a good money manager or an investment manager have?
Well, the first thing, I think they should be pragmatic and understand that markets are extremely efficient. And so if they're going to be an active manager, they have to have some type of informational or competitive edge. And that is getting more and more difficult to do. And so my portfolio is, having spent so many years trying to find active managers, my portfolio is primarily passive in terms of the public portfolio, in terms of indexing. When I use an active manager, it's because I can get exposure to a strategy or an asset class that I can't replicate with an ETF. And then I allow a lot of the active, I focus more on the private side, be it private equity, venture capital, et cetera. But I think if you're an investor trying to find active managers, it's challenging to do, but seek those that are willing to stick to their knitting. In other words, they have a defined investment process and philosophy. They're always seeking to find some type of informational competitive edge, but they're not necessarily changing to the flavor of the month in order to attract assets.
So, David, later on in the program today, we'll be chatting with Mr. Burton Malkiel, who, of course, wrote the classic finance book back in the 70s, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. And you sound a lot like what he sounds like. And when you talk about active management versus passive management, it might be good to just go back to a one-on-one level explanation as to what the difference is for our listeners that may not be familiar with those terms.
Sure. What's typically known as passive management, or is also known as indexing, is seeking to replicate a segment of the market. Typically, it could be an index fund or ETF that might have hundreds and hundreds of holdings, and they're set up to replicate, let's say, the S&P 500, which is a measure of U.S. large company stocks. You buy an S&P 500 index fund that's seeking to not outperform that index, it's seeking to match it, and you can do that across the globe in terms of all asset classes. An active management strategy is where you're hiring a manager, typically paying a much higher fee, and they're making individual security selections in the attempt to outperform a particular segment of the market. So if you hire a large company manager, a large cap stock manager, they will be seeking to outperform some segment of either the S&P 500 as a whole, or maybe the value index of the S&P, or a growth index. And as a major distinction is, the fees are much higher, the turnover is much higher with these active managers versus passive. Now, where I differ is I believe that all investors are active. And so even though you might be using a passive indexing strategy, there is the decision, when do you rebalance? Which asset classes do you hold? In other words, if somebody was completely passive, they would own what's known as a market portfolio, which is all asset classes, let's just say all public asset classes, and they would be weighted based on their weighting in, let's say, a global index, such as the MSCI All Country World Index. And so if an investor, for example, doesn't have as much in, let's say they have 70% in U.S. stocks in their portfolio, versus the ACWI, which is about 52% U.S. stocks. So if an investor is completely passive in indexing but has 70% U.S. stocks, well, they're making an active bet. And deciding when they're going to rebalance is an active bet. And so I've always, the sort of all active or all passive, I've always invested in both. I'm comfortable with both, recognizing at the end of the day, I have to make active decisions in terms of at least what my asset allocation is going to be, what are the vehicles am I going to use, when am I going to rebalance. And so there's everyone at the end of the day is active.
Well, we are chatting today with Mr. David Stein. David is the host of the top-rated podcast, Money for the Rest of Us. And David, if someone would like to listen to your podcast, what kind of direction could you give them?
You can Google it, for one thing, or you can the actual home of the podcast is at moneyfortherestofus.net. It's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher Radio, it's on iHeartRadio, it's on TuneIn Radio, so it's in many, however you like to listen to podcasts or shows, you can.
Come on, listen to the Money Talk. That's the way you do it, money for nothing and your chicks for free.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio Podcast. I'm Dennis Tubergen, your host. Before I get back to my interview with Mr. J. David Stein, let me remind you that all of the past interviews we've had with guest experts are posted online at everythingfinancialradio.com. If you'd like to listen to any of our past interviews, just visit everythingfinancialradio.com. I'm pleased to be chatting today with David Stein. David is the host of the podcast Money for the Rest of Us, and we've been chatting with David about his investment philosophy. And David, in this segment, I'd like to get your take on what you believe the health of the global economy to be. How do things look out there to you?
In a word, stagnant. You look at one of the things I focus on the podcast and on the education I do with investors is looking at what's known as purchaser manager indices. And these are surveys that are done all around the world asking businesses, so people that are day-to-day running businesses, how's your business? How's your sales? How's your employment? How's your inventory? And they're aggregated together. A provider that, for example, is Markit, M-A-R-K-I-T, you can go onto their site and look at these releases that they do once a month. And the way that these surveys work is 50 is sort of the cutoff point. So generally when the surveys is aggregated and it's 50 or above, it suggests the global economy is growing. When it's 50 or below, it suggests the global economy is shrinking or at least not living up to its potential. And right now, when you look at the JPM global PMI, it's at 50. The manufacturing is at 50. So right there on that cutoff point, if you include both the services sector and the manufacturing, we're at 50.6. And so we've not had a robust recovery, but generally speaking, when I look at the global economy, it causes some concern. But I'm not in the point. What I do is I do adjust my asset allocation based on conditions. I do believe we are in a secular bull market and have been since 2009. So I'm not shifting completely into a risk-free mode. But it's certainly I look at the economy and I want to make sure that if we see that PMI data and some of these indicators get sort of in that high 40s, that would cause more of a concern. One of the things to be aware of, which is why looking at economic trends are so important, when the global economy has been in a recession along with the U.S., the average stock market loss globally has been about a 46% decline. And so it's important to look at globally, but also look at the U.S. And when the overall global economy has been in a slowdown or recession, and the U.S. is not, the overall decline in the MSCI All Country World Index or global stocks has been about 17%, which is about what we saw in this cyclical decline from May 2015 through the low of early February 2016, about a 17%. So even though the global economy has had challenges, U.S. is sort of the one to focus on to see if it can continue to put up at least some decent economic growth, but there are also some headwinds there.
So, David, when you take a look at these indices that you're talking about, the purchaser manager indices, are you saying that things have been slowing, or has it just been stagnant in your view since we actually came out of the recession?
I would say in the last year it's been slowing. The recovery has been a below par recovery, but the global economy has been growing at 2 to 3%. The U.S. has kind of been there also. And so it's not as if it's stagnating, not growing at all. It's just that the growth rates have not been as strong as in prior recoveries. And in the last year, the growth rate has slowed, but it's not by any means contracting, nor is the U.S. And so we continue to have economic growth. And that's at a backdrop when you look at the other thing I look at is, well, what are valuations? And when you look at global stock valuations, let's say on a cyclical basis, what's known as the Shiller PE, you look at the earnings over the past 10 years compared to the price of stocks, they're fairly valued. They're not dramatically cheap. They are cheaper than their 20-year average, but they're not overvalued globally. And so if you can get some decent economic growth, you have some valuations that support it, and as long as investors remain positive, then you can see markets continue to go up as we saw throughout this secular bull market where we've seen global stocks on an annualized basis since 2009 return mid-teens. Now, when I talk about valuations, I'm a little more concerned about U.S. valuations because they're based on that same measure such as the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio, or Shiller PE. U.S. market is overvalued compared to its historical average and is overvalued relative, let's say, the median price-to-earnings ratio on the S&P 500 and price-to-sales. It's overvalued. So I'm more concerned about the U.S., less concerned about global stocks overall.
So, David, let me just ask you, take somebody that today is retired or close to retirement. They've got some money in stocks. What kind of hedge strategy, or maybe a better way to phrase that is, what should their allocation potentially look like in your view, just to avoid maybe participating in that 46% average decline that you just mentioned?
The number that I share when I teach people is sort of a worst case scenario for stocks and we saw this sort of the 2008 period, is a 54% decline. So retirees need to focus on the extreme and not the average. And oftentimes, what do I mean by that? Well, oftentimes we'll use these asset allocation models or calculators, and it'll give a recommended allocation, but it's focusing on what's the average return been historically or what the expectation is the average going forward. I'm much more worried about the extreme event. And so a retiree should have multiple asset classes. And so now I'm essentially retired. And by retire, my definition of retirement is I'm able to pursue the activities I find most interesting, and my income is primarily driven from my investment portfolio. So I still work, but I am focused on a portfolio. And I'm not comfortable individually having more than 30% in stocks because I can't afford to suffer a 54% decline. So what do I do instead? Well, I own bonds, I own REITs, I own some private real estate, I own gold, I own master limited partnerships, I own convertible bonds, I own some private equity, and so I'm very diversified because I want multiple drivers of my portfolio that'll do well under multiple conditions. And at the same time, I am willing to adjust my allocation based on the opportunities, focusing on valuations, focusing on economic trends, such as PMI data that I mentioned, and then focusing on what is really the swing vote, which I call market internals. And that is, you know, what is the level of exuberance in the market? What's the level of momentum in the level of trend? And that's sort of a confirmation vote. If one can't invest, I mean, some hedge funds can invest strictly on market internals, but that ends up being much more of a trading strategy. But for a long-term investor like myself, having the valuations and economic trends as a base and then using some of these market internal indicators, and some of them are more technical indicators that we talked about on earlier programs, such as are stocks above the 200-day moving average and things of that sort, use them as a confirmation to say, all right, we have a supportive market, trends are in our favor, I can afford to take more risk.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been J. David Stein. The podcast is Money for the Rest of Us, and the website is moneyfortherestofus.net. David, thank you for joining us today. Love to have you back.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Be sure to stay tuned to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. Joining me in the next segment, Mr. Burton Malkiel. He is the author of the legendary book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. I know you're going to enjoy my conversation with him, and we'll get to that right after these words.
Give me your money, just give me money. Monday, 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 always Sunday, in the rich man's world.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm Dennis Tubergen, your host. Glad you decided to tune in today. Again, let me remind you, if you're not yet a subscriber to my newsletter titled Portfolio Watch, it's easy to get your free subscription. All you need to do is visit the website, yourportfoliowatch.com, and sign up. The website, again, yourportfoliowatch.com. I'm pleased to have as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Burton Malkiel. Mr. Malkiel is probably best known for his classic book on finance, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. That book is now in its 11th edition. He's also the Chief Investment Officer of Wealthfront. And Mr. Malkiel, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
For listeners that may not be familiar with your philosophy on investing that was so nicely outlined in your book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, share with the listeners what your philosophy is.
Well, basically, I have believed in so-called index funds from 1973 when the book was first published, and that was even before index funds were available. Now, by an index fund, I simply mean a fund that buys and holds all the stocks in the stock market, doesn't trade, doesn't try to beat the market, but because they are simply passive, in that they are holding all the stocks. They are able to charge extraordinarily low expense ratios. These index funds are now available as ETFs, exchange-traded funds, and we're talking about expense ratios that are as low as 1/20 of 1%. In other words, the competition has driven expense ratios down very close to zero. Now, my philosophy has been that this is not average performance, this is not mediocre performance, but when you look at how index funds have done relative to so-called actively managed funds, where you have someone trying to beat the market, you find that year after year, the index funds are better than, have higher returns than about two-thirds of the actively managed funds, and this is true year after year. And the one-third that beat the market in 1 year are unlikely to be the same one-third that beat the market the next year. And so when you look over 5 or 10 or 15 years, you find that index funds tend to beat 90% of the active managers. It's not that it's impossible to beat the market. You might be lucky enough to be in one of those few funds that do beat the market over the long term. But when you try to go active, you're much more likely to be in the 90% at the bottom of the distribution that do a lot worse than the market. So basically, my philosophy is that investors would be very well served to have the core of their investment portfolio be invested in index funds, and that's true for stocks, it's true for bonds, and it's true for real estate investment trusts.
Burton, let me ask you, just to compare for our listeners, the difference in fees between, say, an average actively managed stock fund and an index stock fund, and what impact that fee disparity might have on performance ultimately over the life of the investment.
The difference is striking and large. The typical actively managed fund would charge about 1%. So the index fund is very close to zero. There's something like a 1% difference between the cost of the active fund, the expense ratio of the active fund, and the expense ratio of the index fund. And this adds up over time. The difference between, let's say, a 6% rate of return and a 7% rate of return, those costs compound, and over 10, 20, 30 years, you might be talking about having a final amount that is maybe 70% of what you might have if you were in an index fund. Now, the other problem with the actively managed fund, and this is certainly true for any investor who pays taxes on his or her investments, that typically the actively managed fund, because it is trading from stock to stock, is A, realizing transactions costs, and B, realizing taxable gains for investors. The nice thing about the index fund is it typically avoids transactions costs, brokerage fees and the like, bid-ask spreads, and all that's involved in trading stocks. And also what you have is that the index fund is very tax efficient. That is to say, it doesn't give you a 1099 at the end of the year saying, oh, by the way, we realized these short-term gains, which are taxed as regular income, and we realized these long-term gains on which you would have to pay a capital gains tax. So when you put it all together and you then look at this over a long period of time, the investor, I believe, will be substantially better off with index funds than he or she would be with actively managed funds.
Well, in case you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Burton Malkiel. Many of you know Mr. Malkiel as the author of the book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Mr. Malkiel is also the chief investment officer of Wealthfront. And Burton, we have time for one more question in this segment. We talked about fees and taxes and transaction costs. So let's just look at an actively managed fund that might have turnover of, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80% per year.
Yes.
That's not unusual. What effect
exactly
does that have on ultimately what your bottom line gain might be in that investment?
Well, again, while the brokerage fees are low for institutional investors, there is a cost that is indicated by the difference between the bid price of a security and the asked price of a security. I mean, for example, a particular common stock might be traded $30 bid, $30.20 asked. That means that when you buy the security, you pay $30.20, and when you sell the security, you sell it at $30. I think people don't realize that, particularly if they go to a discount broker, they think, trading doesn't really cost me anything. I get it at $7 a trade. But it's the bid-ask spread that's, in fact, the big part of the transaction's cost. And for a large institutional investor, there's also something called a market impact cost. If you want to buy a huge block of this $30 stock and you start buying it at $30.20, you may find that the next block that you buy will be $30.40 or $30.50. So again, these are the kind of hidden costs that I think people don't appreciate, they can be quite substantial. Of course, the other part of it is that when you are turning your portfolio over 50% a year, I think your statistic is exactly right, 50-60% is typically what happens. You are, since markets, at least over long periods of time, go up, you are realizing capital gains and you are paying taxes on them. And, you know, I think every investor ought to look carefully. This is tax season now. You ought to look carefully at those 1099s you get from your broker and look how much was realized on capital gains in some of the stocks that you owned. Just remember that when that's put on your 1040, you're going to pay taxes on it. So again, I think my advice to people is look very carefully at expense ratios, at taxes. You know, one of the things I like to say is I think all of us who are giving advice about investing need to be very modest about what we know and don't know. But one of the things that I am absolutely sure about is that the lower the fees that I pay to the purveyor of the investment service, the more there's going to be for me.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today is Burton Malkiel. He is famous for his classic book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, now in its 11th edition. He's also the Chief Investment Officer of Wealthfront. And we'll continue our conversation with him when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. This is Dennis Tubergen. I hope you're enjoying my conversation today with Mr. Burton Malkiel, and I'll get back to that conversation right now. I'm privileged to be chatting today with Burton Malkiel. He is the author of the classic finance book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, now in its 11th edition. He is also the Chief Investment Officer of Wealthfront. And Burton, tell me about your work with Wealthfront. What's the company all about?
Well, what Wealthfront does is it's an automated investment service. It puts together portfolios for people. It tries to analyze how much risk they can accept, what their investment goals are, and puts together a broadly diversified portfolio. Now, what we do is we will manage the first $15,000 of any investor's money for free. And after that, we will charge 0.25%. So in some sense, we're doing portfolio management for portfolio management, exactly what index funds does for fund investing. And we invest in exchange-traded index funds, so we do use index funds, and we manage an overall portfolio for very much less than it would cost to get an investment advisor. Now, if you go to an investment advisor, you say, well, gee, I want somebody to manage my portfolio, diversify it for me, et cetera. And that investment advisor is likely to charge you 1 or 2 or even 3%. And that investment advisor is often likely to be conflicted. That is to say, the investment advisor, if he or she sells you an actively managed fund, they get some extra sales commission, essentially, for putting you into an actively managed fund. So the investment advisor typically uses actively managed funds, typically is conflicted, and typically charges 1, 2, or 3%. Brokers who say, we'll have a wrap account for you. We'll manage all your money. You won't have to pay brokerage commissions, but we'll charge you 2 or 3 percentage points. So essentially, what we're doing at Wealthfront is we're automating it, and we're automating it at low cost. We're doing basically what index funds do for investing in funds. We're doing it for overall portfolio management, and we make it a diversified portfolio. And what we do is we will sometimes buy and sell, but only to realize capital losses. And this is extremely important. Typically, you pay taxes on all of the capital gains that you make. What we will do is during a period where one of your diversified investments goes down, we will sell one index fund and buy another index fund. For example, suppose that you had, as part of your overall portfolio, a small piece that was in an index fund of emerging market stocks. Now, last year, emerging market stocks went down. What we would do is we would sell one index fund that was perhaps indexed to the MSCI Emerging Market Index, and buy another index fund or ETF that is indexed to the FTSE Emerging Market Index. They're different indices, so it's not a wash sale. We realize the capital loss, but we basically keep the exposure to those markets. And if you look even in the U.S. market, what we were able to do this year in 2016, investors will know that markets were down about 10% at the beginning of the year, so we could sell one ETF that held U.S. stocks and buy another ETF and realize the capital loss that was suffered on U.S. stocks at the beginning of the year, and yet keep our exposure to U.S. stocks, and therefore we were able to get the increase and the bounce back that happened after mid-February to mid-March. So this is what we do. We're investment managers, but we're able to do it at rock-bottom costs because it's all automated.
Bern, I have time for one more question here, and we've got just a couple minutes left in this segment. There are periods of time when you see traditional allocation models, which typically include stocks and bonds, there are periods of time that those sometimes underperform. They lose money even in combination. 2007, 2008 might be one of those examples. What's your take and what's your position on managing risk, particularly for people maybe that are retired and have a need for the money?
Well, what you need is you need a different portfolio if you're in retirement than if you are a young person in your 20s or 30s who's saving for retirement and can ride out the ups and downs. So the person in retirement generally needs a safer portfolio, generally needs more income. So to the extent that one holds stocks, one would probably want an index fund, for example, of relatively safe blue chip dividend payers, or dividend payers where the dividend's been rising over time. So the basic idea is that person needs a less risky portfolio, needs much more fixed income than another person. But in terms of trying to time the market, that, boy, let's see if we can get out of the market when it's about to go down and get back in when it's about to go up, I think that's an absolute fool's game. You can never do it. Individuals can't do it. Professionals can't do it. And when you do it, you're more likely to be wrong than right. You're more likely to sell out in periods like 2008 when the world is falling apart. And buy, as people did just at the height of the internet bubble in early 2000. So don't try to time the market. Control risk by diversification and having the right kind of securities for your risk level and stage in life.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today, Burton Malkiel, his book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, is now in its 11th edition. If you've not read it, I would encourage you to do so. And, Burton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciated it.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for tuning in to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. Hope you got something you can use, and we'll talk again next week.